Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host Scott Tilford, joined by James Dowse.
Hiya Scott.
Hello, I'm Josh Brown.
Hello Scott and James.
Hi James.
We're getting very formal on this, the day of The Last of Us. 2 days after the Americans have seen it, one day for us.
Let me make it more informal. Hello, James Dowselfini. Hello.
Very good.
I don't get it.
That's some sort of in-joke that I also do not get. But I would assume that Josh is very happy, so it's probably a good thing.
Listen, at 4:30 on a Tuesday night.
Yes.
That is the
You've
quality.
Had a day of filming, you've been in the studio all day.
All I'm here for today is to pop myself and to pop nobody else. No one else needs to get the jokes, as long as I like them.
I'm
going to
make
fine.
You a shirt using the Last of Us font that just says, the best of us. Yeah. And you can just wear that shirt.
Didn't I even make that joke? And I don't even get it myself.
No, you don't get any credit for it. You made the joke, but I
said it louder.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who made a joke, it's about who says it first.
All right. I don't think that's true in law. But still, The Last of Us is finally out. HBO is The Last of Us. We've all seen the first episode. We're not going to do these every single week, but we thought we'd do a little gathering of the three of us to talk about the premiere and just general thoughts on the show, where we think it's going to go and comparisons to the game, etc. And I think at the end of the whole season, we'll do another one and we'll sort of see how that thing comes together. But yeah, I want to do just an open set of questions for this because Josh has just done the ups and downs over on the YouTube channel for What Culture Gaming. So go check that out. And I just wanted this to be a bit more free-form conversation and see where we come down. I know. I'm the most negative on this. I don't want to be. I don't want to be Mr. Negativo. I would rather you guys talked about what was good about it.
What I'm really excited about for this podcast is normally when we do podcasts like this where something is, you know, it come out, whether it's a game, a movie, whatever, like we have like a two-hour chat in the office beforehand and then we record the podcast. So I already know everything you guys are going to say. I have no idea what you think about The Last of Us, James Dowser.
Because I had to cut you off, Scott, because I was like, I'm telling you so many things via our Slack messages.
Yeah, you told me on Slack, you were like, I'm going to shut you down and we'll talk about this later. But anyway, this. And I was like, we ended up just talking about it anyway.
I specifically didn't talk to you, Josh, so it would be fresh here.
Yes.
And here we are.
Give me your thoughts, Mr. James Dowser, on The Last of Us.
I liked it.
Yeah. Did you? Yeah, I was going to say.
I would say I loved it.
Right.
It's 9 out of 10 for me, though. It is absolutely the best video game adaptation of a game I've seen.
Yeah.
Movie, whatever.
Like a live action thing.
You know what I meant.
I do. I think, actually, Josh, give me your thoughts on it, mate.
Yes. I mean, if you've watched the ups and downs by the time this goes out, you'll know I'm very hot on it. Mm. I thought it does very little wrong. There are a few things I wouldn't have done personally. I think it's very, very good. I think it's not let down, but it's familiar in its subject matter in terms of it, you know, depicting Outbreak Day. Mm. Yep. It's stuff we've kind of seen before in the realm of TV and movies, executed very well. For me, it's an interesting bit of The Last of Us to adapt because I've always been of the opinion that the stretch, spoilers, after Sarah's death until Joel, Tess, and Ellie leave the quarantine zone, that's the worst bit of the game for me. It's one of my favorite games of all time, one of my favorite stories, but that's the least compelling, most convoluted part. Okay. So because half of this episode focuses on that, I think a lot of the changes that it brought to the table were very well received for me. But yeah, it's I would agree with Dallas. It's a 9 out of 10. I don't think it's necessarily one of the best pilots ever made.
No.
But it's a solid introduction. It gets almost everything right, in my opinion. And it's made me very excited to see how they build on it.
So far, are you happy with the pacing? Like how you said then, that was the worst part of the game for you. Are you happy with how that played out in the show because it went so quick? Kind of.
Yes. Mm. I will get into this probably when we jump into specifics, but yeah. For me, the changes that they've made and the tweaks and the condensing some of the plot lines when it comes to the likes of Robert and Tess and Joel encountering Ellie, to me, that actually makes that stretch more compelling than it is in the game. For me, 100%. And, you know, we'll probably get into this in detail, but the Robert part on the game, because it's so tutorialized, I don't find that very fun. I find it a little bit bland in terms of the encounters you're going up against. I love the scene with Tess, Joel, and Robert where, you know, he gets executed after they interrogate him. That's unbelievable. Yeah. But before that, you know, I think Ellie takes too long to be introduced, so I like that in the show, they kind of make her a character before Joel meets her, because obviously you get the benefit with it being a TV show. You're not strapped into Joel's perspective. Yeah, you get to jump around characters. So I like the way that they sped it up here. And I like that this first episode ended with them leaving the quarantine zone rather than, for instance, meeting Ellie or meeting the Fireflies and then having to go on the mission.
Yeah. That was like an interesting thing of like, where are they going to cap that first episode? Like, what do you leave off on? There's a lot of like specific scenes that you can do. And as soon as they started leaving the quarantine zone or whatever, I was like, they're going to do the scene where you reveal that she's actually infected, and then you sort of like cut to black or whatever. You like, that's the end of that episode. For me, it's just, and I'm going to absolutely flag for this entire show that I am very precious with The Last of Us. It's one of my favorite games of all time. It's one of my favorite stories of all time. One of my favorite characters. A set of some of my favorite characters of all time. So I'm very, very precious about what you change, what you tweak, what you adapt, and what you try and add to it. And I just had that feeling of every single scene they recreate in this, that is directly the same dialogue and like, you know, exactly the same setup and everything, is worse. I think that every single scene, if you directly compare them, was done better in the game. And everything that they add, I found to just be largely pointless. Like the stuff, and the thing, I don't even want to make this like a big negative pod. I know that I'm very much in the minority. Like it's 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's critical reviews, it's 96% audience score. Everything on social media is like 10 out of 10. Oh my God, this thing is incredible. And I just think ultimately I can't divorce my subjective love of The Last of Us from just viewing it as just a zombie show. I mean, I could if you like forced me to do it.
Right.
But like, I just love it too much as an original work. And it's one of the first times I've really loved an original work that was being specifically recreated where I have that original thing to compare it to. And for me, it's never going to be anywhere near. Nothing will ever be as close as the original 2013 Last of Us.
I must admit, and I want to know Douse's opinion on this because I don't know it, but when, like, I was quite naive going into it, that it took me a while to kind of realize that, oh yeah, this is its own thing. You know, right from the opening scene where we get that scene in the chat show in 1968, I kind of had to recalibrate, because for as much as I was looking forward to this, and I really was, keeping up with it, with the production of it in a way that I don't for almost anything, I was still unprepared for, of course, they're going to be making changes big and small, and it's not just going to be the game's cutscenes for better or worse. And that, to me, initially, I was kind of taken a little bit aback by it, so I want to go back and watch it again, knowing now what it is and what they're changing and how they're approaching it. Because for that first scene and for a few scenes afterwards, I was kind of, it was not like I was disliking it, but I was actively divorcing what I was seeing from the game and from what I was expecting to happen in the show, because they are different beasts. And that was kind of weird having to do that, because I've played The Last of Us. Mm-hmm. It's probably the game I've replayed the most. I replayed it at the end of last year when part one came out. Mm-hmm. I know those scenes like you guys probably do, like the back of my hand. I know the intonations of every dialogue. I know every camera movement more or less. Mm-hmm. So I had to get that visual language out of my head and be like, no, I need to treat this as not in a vacuum, but I need to not be constantly being like, well, that scene's more elongated, that scene is slightly different, they've changed this, they've added this, you know what I mean?
Even though they do like recreate bits, like when they're all in the car and you get the same camera angle and stuff, like they are directly connoting the game. It's like, look what we did, we made it in live action. But yeah.
Do you not see it as like an accompaniment though? Like how, because I mentioned to you earlier, Scott, with like Ellie in chains and stuff like that, and also like Tess, you can see when Robert interrogated her and stuff like that. You don't see that in the game. So, and also Sarah buying the watch for Joel. Mm-hmm. Like, this is just like an accompaniment of the game.
It's a weird thing to plug those scenes in, right? To be like, oh, that's what the game version of these characters did as well.
Yes. Well, that's what I mean. So it's just like, these are things that you never saw in the game, but you're seeing in live action. You think, oh, that was fair enough. That's there. Mm-hmm. It didn't have to be there because in the game it's not there and it's still told a good story. Mm-hmm. But it's I like those scenes.
I have that feeling where I'm just like, because it's so close to the original and because the original was cinematically shot and is so competent as, if you just watched all the cutscenes stitched together, you've still got a very, very competent movie. Like, obviously there's bits missing because it's the gameplay parts, but in terms of how those scenes are shot and how they're acted, it's already a really solid, incredibly well-made movie. So, like, it's just a weird quandary. We've never really had this before where something is so cinematically complete and then to do it in live action with a budget and with Craig Mazin from Chernobyl and then to try and match that. I think that's where for me it falls down because it just can't get there. Like, it's never going to get there because it's already so complete.
I think that's why I liked the new scenes more than the recreations. Mm. The recreations were absolutely spot on, and sometimes they really worked. I loved the scene where all hell is breaking loose and Sarah's in the car and they're driving. Mm. It's more or less shot for sure for the game, but it still worked. It's still intense. They've done a really good job of translating that. But for me, in some of the other scenes that were one for one, I was, you know, maybe missing a camera movement that was in the original game or that game's cinematography or a certain style of performance. So when it came to like the other stuff that was added, that was fleshed out, I loved all the stuff with Sarah at the beginning. Right. I loved more or less every single addition or change they made to the story in every scene they added because, it's not necessarily, it doesn't make the first version of the story inferior by not having them. But for me, in a kind of like television show, it allowed you to know the characters, especially in a way that you can't if you... In a way that you could with gameplay in the original game is what I'm trying to say. If you remove the gameplay, how do you still get the audience familiar with the characters? And to me, it was through those extra scenes, the addition of them.
Do you know what I was also doing? I was turning off my brain at the parts that I recognized and then the new scenes. I was just like, oh, here I am. Yeah. And he was waking up for those scenes, and then when you saw him doing the things, you know, it's just, this show is made for people who have played the game but they want to see the new scenes. That's arguably what I want to see.
Yeah, well, I think it works best if you have no frame of reference for it. Like if you're my mum and you're sitting down to watch it.
It is for people who haven't seen it.
Because for me, I think it's kind of weird when they directly recreate a scene, almost with the same beats. Like that bit when Sarah gives Joel the watch, you're waiting for him to say like, oh, it doesn't work, and have a bit of a laugh that it doesn't work. And they do that exact same thing. It's the same kind of joke. But for me, it doesn't feel as genuine. I didn't think that Pedro Pascal and I forget what you call the woman, the little girl who's playing Sarah.
Nicole Parker.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, Sarah, yeah.
Sorry, I was on about Ellie.
Sarah the character. Yeah. I didn't think they had anywhere near as much rapport as Troy Baker and the other daughter whose actor's name I forgot. So there was just that weird thing of like, we are acting out these parts that have been perfected before. I couldn't shake that. And I think that's like, that's another wider question as well, is like, what do you want from a video game adaptation? And Tim, do you want it to be scene for scene reshot? It depends what the source material is. In this case, The Last of Us is already cinematically, you could just literally recreate those scenes as they did with the car stuff. Or do you want something more like Uncharted, only as a template, where you take all the nomenclature, all the names, all the locations, and you just sort of like spread them out over a table and remix stuff. And now this person is related to this person and this thing caused this and whatever. And is that an approach to do? That's what kind of what Castlevania did. I personally drastically prefer that. I think if you take something that is already cinematically complete, there's way less ground to fill out.
There's so much risk to that, though, isn't there? Mm-hmm. Whereas Last of Us is guaranteed to be a success because it's playing it beat for beat what happened.
True, but to me that makes it pointless. Like the closer you get, the more pointless
it is. That makes it safer for audiences who haven't played the game.
Yeah, and I guess that's only like completely subjectively. If it's just safe, it's boring.
Do you not think that you're not the target audience for this show?
Probably.
Yeah.
That's it. Well,
that's why I said I'm super precious about it.
Yeah. That's what I think when you say it's pointless, because to me it's like, maybe pointless if you love the game and think that's like, it's never going to get better. Mm. I don't even want to see it reinterpretation or see those scenes translated. But like, I do agree with what we're all kind of saying there, where this show, it's certainly for the fans. If, you know, if you're a fan, you'll enjoy the show. Yeah. But it's not only made for you in mind, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's made to attract my dad who watched it. It's made to attract the biggest possible audience who've never seen these beats before, and probably more importantly, would never see them because they would never play the game. But that story is so valuable and so good that I love that it's now accessible to a whole audience who would otherwise never have even heard of it. Yeah, never even hear the names Joel or Ellie. Again, like my dad, I keep bringing him up. Don't know why, but he's just like the kind of example of a person who is not into games, is not into game stories, mm-hmm. but loves the fiction of The Last of Us in the media that he likes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Here's a question. What is the actual like end result of this show? Like, what is the point? Everybody who's bought the game has got the game, and all the people who are watching the show aren't gamers. So what is like, what's the
point? Well, it is just money, isn't it? I mean, it's just money
towards the franchise.
Well, Sony's kind of got a whole thing about like branching out into TV and film. It is them trying to create mega brands with each thing they've got. Yeah. I'm using that term from the Yves Guillemot quote earlier in the week where he referred to things as mega brands. Because Sony would love PlayStation Studios to be a relevant thing in live action and animation. So I guess it's just them going, what's our biggest thing? Because they've already greenlit the Horizon show and the old movie and the God of War one as well. So they just want to be omnipresent. They want to be on all three or multiple mediums all at once. And this is one of their best feet they can put forward. Mm-hmm. But according to all the interviews with like Craig Mazin and stuff, it seems like he pushed for it. Like it seems like he was playing the game and he was like, he wants this to be something bigger. He said it's crying out for it to be something bigger. So he wanted to make this sort of like more live action version of a thing that was already perfect. Craig
I like that he said in one of the interviews, he was like, he's having like the dinner with Neil Druckmann, and Neil Druckmann was wanting to get like a partner or want to field a kind of pitch for The Last of Us. And Craig Mazin essentially said, look, I made Chernobyl. I can go to HBO now and say, this is what I want to do. And that's what he did. He went like, look, I made Chernobyl. This is my next project. Are you on board? And then they had like the pitch meet with HBO and then they accepted it. But if we want to talk about specifics at all, like going back to that scene that you mentioned at the beginning in the 60s show, the 60s thing. Because obviously, we said yesterday, Scott, we were like, what is going to be the first scene of this TV show? And I actually said it would be Sarah waking up in bed and going to school, which is the second scene of the movie. But the first scene caught, I think, everyone by surprise by, you know, giving us something we hadn't seen before.
Since it says 1968, it's like, okay.
What are we doing? And I loved that initially as a marker that this is not going to go exactly as you expected. However, that said, when I was in that scene, initially I was thinking, I don't like this. Same. I've come round to it now, and I'll tell you why, but I want to know your first reaction, because initially I was thinking, ooh, I don't know. I don't know about this.
There was a bit I was mentioning to you what Dan Durkin said to me, where it was like, during the interviews in that scientist bit, he says that there is no cure for the fungi.
Yeah.
Which kind of like,
yeah, it has an impact later down the line.
That's the ultimate end of the entire show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So admittedly, that's a bit of foreshadowing. So I loved the bits that they added into that intro. I really did like it.
I just didn't. I just think that like it just, for me, like one of the most impactful parts of The Last of Us in that intro is that you have no idea what's happening. Like the nearest thing you get is that when Joel and Sarah get into the car with Tommy just says like, oh, I think it's like a parasite or something. And you have no idea what it is. And then you move on and then everything carries on. And you get no real detail as to what it is for like hours. And you can pick up like a newspaper clipping that says there were like crops that were starting to send, that they needed to be recalled or something. It seems like something grew out of some crops and it was like this fungal thing and the cordyceps virus and whatever. But even the first time I went through The Last of Us, I just didn't know the word cordyceps. And like, I think you have to really look for it. And I just didn't like that they spell it out. It's almost like a fundamental aspect of like horror. I just think things are scarier if you don't know what it is. And for John Hannah's character to spell it out so much, where it is just a one-to-one, like this thing is going to take over people, it's going to control their minds, and they're going to go and do stuff and whatever. And I was like, I just didn't need that at all. And I just find that, I just thought it was far more effective in terms of a portrayal of a virus in the original.
I was like that initially. I kind of thought, I don't really need that. But then I was thinking about it, and to me it works because what I loved about Chernobyl in part, and I'm not the first person to say this, is that it's Chernobyl in many ways was like, at least I was portrayed in the show, is like a preventable thing. Like the people in charge know about certain issues, know about certain, you know, things that could go wrong and are prepped on them, but it's like inaction. Mm. And that's what I like that was reflected here. You know, it's like you've got, you know, people on a stage in 1968 talking about the potential, you know, dangers that this could inflict on humanity as we know it. Yes. And people kind of, you know, get worried in the moment and it's a sensational headline, and then it's like, oh, that'll never happen. It'll be fine. Yeah, yeah. And I like that they refer to stuff like, you know, they allude to climate change, they allude to other pandemics in that thing. And it's like, yeah, like some of like the worst things to ever happen throughout human history were preventable. And yet it's almost like inevitable that like the infrastructure and the people in charge will fail everyone
as
by
was
not
the case
being
with all the
prepared.
COVID stuff,
100%. Like, and I like that extra wrinkle and that kind of real world horror. I don't know if I love Craig Mazin's, you know, dedication to making everything grounded, but that was a nice change in terms of people, you know, the writing was always on the wall. I like the inevitability of it in this context.
Yeah, I just, for me, it's just a little bit too cute. Like, they sort of, it's like, oh, well, you know, this isn't going to happen now. It's too far flung, but hey, if the world's temperature gets a bit higher, I don't know. And it's like, yes, global warming is a massive, obvious factor that we talk about almost on the daily. Like, you don't need to make everything as relevant as right now. Like, I just, I mean, you can, but I just think that Last of Us was so strong because it was like its own thing. I wasn't a fan of doing stuff like that. I mean, there's loads of little things that I didn't like where they stitch stuff together to what's going to happen later. Or they bring in like a reference to Last of Us 2. Like, they make it so that on Joel and Sarah's last night together, they watch Dawn of the Wolf 2 or whatever, which is the movie that Ellie wants to watch with Joel in The Last of Us 2 before he dies. It's what they were going to watch or something before he dies. I think that stuff is way too cute. It's like Anakin C-3PO stuff.
Oh, man.
As me, who has played both of the games, I would never have even thought about that.
Right.
Other than it just being like a nice little Easter egg.
Yeah, and I can't, like I said, I'm too precious with it. I just like, it's obviously not an objective thing. So it's for a lot of people, it was just a nice little nod to something that Ellie wants to do with Joel later. But I think that's too, like, it's too neat. Like, it's almost, I don't need Ellie to be Sarah. Like, the whole point is that he learns to love and care for Ellie as like another surrogate daughter kind of thing. It's not like, and the whole thing with Sarah finding the foldable knife in Joel's drawer, and it's like, yeah, because Ellie has a knife as well. It's almost like it's the same person or whatever. I just don't need those little connective tissues. I find that too forced, and like I said, like, it's like too cute.
I like the stuff with the DVD, just because I don't view it as a C-3PO sort of retcon. I just feel like, for me, if you have the ability to go into adapt now two games with the knowledge of all of those games, to me, it's going to make season two even stronger when you get to that scene where Joel, you know, is wanting to watch it with Ellie. Because it's like, to me, I didn't view it as them trying to make Sarah more like Ellie, because it's ultimately, it's Joel's favorite movie. Like, it's not, Ellie hasn't made Joel love that movie, or Sarah's not made Joel that movie. Yeah, well, because he loves it, though. Mm. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, she picks it out for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's based on the knowledge of that character. And I like that. If you can establish stuff like that, even subtly, the payoffs will be big later on. I also loved Marlene mentioning Riley with Ellie as well, because obviously the Left Behind DLC is such a big part of Ellie's, you know, foundation, I guess, why she is her first, you know, love, her first kiss or whatever it is. And then obviously Riley is ultimately killed, taken away from her, and she's suffering from that. I like that this was a nod, not a nod, but it was establishing that framework in a more solid way than the original game did. I know the game had that big thing where Ellie is talking about, you know, everyone, I watched my best friend die or whatever it was, and that's still cool. But to just get that little hint towards the future and get Ellie's reaction, which is so visceral of like, don't speak about Riley, speak about her. I just thought little things like that, they didn't come across as too neat or too cheap to me. It was more building a more consistent world, perhaps.
What about when they mentioned, is it Bill and Frank?
Yep. Yeah.
Because he's not really in the game, is he, Frank?
Frank is just dead at that point. Bill, you find a letter from him saying that he always hated Frank.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though they were together.
Isn't that an entire episode?
Yeah, yeah. Well, they've got, I forget who's playing Frank, but they've cast both those characters. Yeah. Like, that'll be a whole thing.
It's
like
a guy from White Lotus, he's playing Frank.
Is it?
I'm fairly certain.
Mr. Lotus.
He's Mr. Lotus. But yeah, it's just like, he's a character who didn't even need to be explored, and I'm glad that they are, because it's for us to.
I'm very less is more, but again, honestly, like, my overall perspective on this is just that it was a pristine, perfect thing, and you would have to do something way above and beyond for me to say that. Okay, I'm glad you did that. The only scene that I think is arguably better is Sarah's death scene. I think that is unbelievably well acted. I mean, I was in bits after that thing. And then you know it's coming, obviously, from the game, but I just think it's so, so well put together. That's one of the only, literally the only thing in the whole show that I would hold up and be like, okay, that's just as good.
Right.
Whereas everything else just kind of fell down a little bit. And
it's the bit where he threw that boy into the fire. Did that not, like, shock you a bit?
I thought that stuff was just bad, because, like, if you're talking about, like, Joel's entire arc and, well, like...
That was showing him just, like, I don't care anymore.
Yeah, but how on the nose do you want him to be? Like, I just thought it was, like, Like he needs to. It's 20 years later. He's moved on. Like he's trying to like deal with it in reality, where he doesn't have his daughter anymore, and he's so disconnected from the idea of the innocence of a child that he'll just throw them on a bonfire. Like I don't need that. Like,
but that's like a TV trope. That's how that's how you showcase that. Mm-hmm. In a game, there's like hours that you can show that.
Yeah, I just like I said, I thought they did it more naturally with him. Like in the game, I just felt less signposted, less okay. Like, do you get it? Do you get it? He's disconnected from that. He can't love. Do you get it?
Well, I don't know. I don't think I agree. But I know what you mean. What you mean.
Skipping back a little bit, talk about some subtler changes. I like the more prominent role of Tommy in the opening, right, where you get that scene where you know they're sitting down.
I'm just realizing every single thing. I just don't agree with any of it. No, you guys should champion it though, because clearly I'm in the 1%. No, but no, I didn't like that either. But oh my god, my head.
Tommy was perfect.
I thought he was the best character.
Like he was good casting.
Yeah,
he's phenomenal in the series.
Everything about him was Tommy.
And I mean, they've made a few other changes to Tommy and Joel's relationship, but having him like in the house talking to Sarah, you know, having that family dynamic more established, like Tommy and Joel obviously great in the game, but I love Tommy in part two, and I love the connection that he has with his brother and the things that he would do for his brother in that game, and just how dark he gets.
Yeah,
and you know, knowing
the end,
totally, and knowing that will probably be incorporated into a season two or three or whatever of the show. Establishing that core initially to me is going to pay off really well for when they do eventually, you know, meet up later on in Wyoming, and to see them so close there. And then presumably, you know, some bad stuff has gone down. You know, later on, Joel says to Marlene, "Oh, you turn my brother against me," or whatever. Like when they meet up and kind of have that bad blood, I just think that was another smart move. Where it's only one scene, it's only a slightly more prominent role for Tommy. But to me, just to establish that dynamic straight away, I do think like all this stuff, I do think it's going to ultimately pay off.
Because they do change like that whole they change the whole layout of where Tommy is. Like he's not in some like water generator near Jackson or whatever. Like he is in the original game. Like he's out there somewhere. I guess we don't really know. But Joel wants to hunt him down anyway. He was already going to be leaving anyway. As opposed to like just leaving because he needs to do the cargo mission with Ellie in the game. It's things like that where I'm too hung up on less is more, and I'm too hung up on the plot beats that are already there. That like switching that stuff around for me doesn't really add much. However, they do show that bit when Joel is trying to plan the route that he might take to get to Tommy, and he's just having all these different pills and stuff. I mean, the same pill, but over and over again. Do you think they'll do more with that? Do you think they flesh out? Because I saw Craig Mazin talk about, you know, because Joel, obviously in the TV show, isn't a video game character, he needs to feel the ramifications of punching someone a lot or running around a lot or whatever. And he's like, he's getting on. He's like a 50-whatever-year-old man or something. Or 40s or whatever. Do you think they have that as like he's literally taking painkillers to deal with it? It's like Max Payne 3 or something.
Yeah.
Like he's trying to bury, like, that's the. And by the end of it, he'll be this like husk of a dude who's like barely clinging onto Ellie, and that's why he saves her or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a nice little wrinkle that you can add to a live action adaptation that you can't really convey in game without it becoming frustrating. Like, Joel in the game is superhuman for a 50 plus year old. You know what I mean? Yeah. He is capable of
crouching around like nobody's business.
It's capable of crazy things, and that's cool. It doesn't take you out of it. Yeah. It doesn't break your suspension of disbelief. It's totally fine. But you have the ability here to be like, oh God, like the 20 years have taken a toll on this man. You know what I mean? He's looking for something, and if he keeps going the way he's going, his body is going to break down. Mm. Never mind his mind. He literally won't be able to do anything.
So what's going to happen when he actually does get like destroyed body-wise, and then Ellie has to look after it? Is he going to be a mess?
Yeah.
Oh my God, yeah, we have all that scene, don't we? Yeah. Depends how they do it.
Ramming pills down his throat.
Well, I'll go back to life.
What did you think about Joel in general, like Pedro Pascal's performance?
I saw him as Joel from the get-go.
Right.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I think he is a good Joel.
I wish I thought the same. I can't. It's so annoying. I can't give it anything positive personally, genuinely, okay, other than the Sarah scene. It just was a worse version of everything that I love.
So was Sarah his daughter? Like, could you see that?
No, I thought they had worse rapport.
Really?
Like, yeah. I just thought that, like I said, like Troy, the game Joel and game Sarah had a better rapport together.
You knew them for less time in the game.
Yeah, which is why. But they open on that scene where it's like Sarah and Joel, and he's coming back in. He's like, "Oh, I need that like contract work to come through." And then she's got him the watch, and she stayed up for him, and that like that little joke about like, "Oh, how did you even afford this?" And she's like, "Drugs. I sell hardcore drugs." Yeah. And it's like that's just like a fun back and forth. Like immediately you get them, and it's like,
but that's in the show.
Yeah, but the delivery's like just different. Like it just feels like they're wearing that skin. It's me. I'm broken. Like I'm the 1% in the Rotten Tomatoes score. But like that stuff just didn't. None of that stuff.
What works about the addition of the old lady next door?
I
quite like that.
You guys should talk about it, because I was just like, oh, is it a creepy old woman again? Is it? Is it a barbarian again? Is it?
Let me go show this, James.
I'm just a bit confused. How is she infected then? The old lady. How did she get that?
Well, here's the thing.
How did the planes fall out of the sky? Carry on. Well,
I don't know if you want me to say it, because there's a theory going around online. So. Quit now if you don't want to know.
We've
this
already
theory.
Spoiled the story anyway.
No, but this is for upcoming things. You know what I mean? Okay. Yeah.
We just talk about the end of the game story, but we don't know if that's the end of the show story.
Oh, totally.
It just assumedly is.
Yeah. I think because the infection seems to be different in the show than it is in the game. Like, obviously, you don't have spores.
We should talk about that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
You got these tendrils and stuff. Yes. But the theory going around on Reddit and online, James, is that they talk throughout the early parts of the show about, you know, baking cookies. Joel's going to get the cake in all the way through. Both Joel and Sarah decline. They turn down the cookies. Joel doesn't get the cake. They don't eat anything. Right. And apparently the infection is in the food, similar to how it was
with the
crops before. It's in the flour. I don't know if vegans can eat flour. But apparently because of the fungus or whatever, apparently that's what people think is how it transmitted initially. If there wasn't spores, it was in like contaminated food.
Because they did show that bit where the old man was feeding.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly, that's true. That.
Okay, fair enough.
That's a good spot. Yeah, because in the game, it's like some sort of crop, some sort of mutation that was then harvested and spread through our various, assumedly, food products. Because I was like, how did the planes fall out the sky? But like, whatever they ate, like happened, like they ate that stuff and then fell out the sky.
Yeah,
or the pilot just became infected.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
What? How do you feel then about spores not being in the show?
Spoilers.
Spores.
I kind of hate that, surprisingly. What do you know?
We don't even need Scott here. We'll just get like,
I know, man.
AI me some puppet. Phrases.
Honestly,
and
you know,
I'll keep pressing the button.
You know when like something you've, well, I was looking forward to this, but as an example, like you know, something you're looking forward to comes out, or something that's a high profile thing comes out and you're watching it and you know you're going to talk about it later, like with your friends, or you can, in our case, it's like you can talk about it on here and you know you have nothing to say because I just know that none of it worked for me, but I still want to have that conversation. I still want to talk about it. Just none of it. None of it worked for me, other than the Sarah thing. But the spore thing, I think is, I mean, whatever. I guess I have faith that they'll do something cool with it. But when that grandma bit that woman, and then it looked like she had a mouthful of hair. And I was just like, okay.
She had little things coming out.
And but the spores have such a payoff in both games, because Ellie like gives Dina her mask in part two. And it's a massive deal. I hate that they took that out.
I mentioned as well the hospital fight in part two of Ellie when she pushes that girl into the thing.
Yes.
And then like, and that's the first, and you get her realize that that whole scene of like using it, actually being able to be comfortable with it. Like, you don't have any of that.
That's the only thing that took me out of the immersion a little bit. Because when they started going up to him on the wall, the infected, and the, it's like, put the mask on, but they didn't. That's the only thing that took me out.
Mm-hmm. There are two things I want to say. First, going back to the old lady. I just thought, when I was watching the scene where she is like out of focus and she's turning and you know, contorting.
That was like kind of cool. Yeah.
I thought that was such an effective horror moment.
It was.
That you wouldn't see in the game, maybe just because of the way the cutscenes are made or whatever. And that was a thing where I was just pointing and going, that's unique to the show. And that's excellent. What a great moment.
That's funny because I was like, oh, it's another creepy old woman.
It's
another creepy old person. That's apparently the only horror we can do these days.
Even if it wasn't an old woman, though, just that idea of someone being there and changing without you realizing. And then you look back and it seems like she's normal, but the infection has taken hold.
Yeah.
I love that as kind of a scene in itself and as a reflection of, oh no, things are going on in the periphery that you aren't noticing, but everything is building towards it. Everything is changing around you and you don't even realize it. With the spores, I kind of go back and forward on it because obviously the spores is such a cool and identifiable part of the franchise. And like you were saying, comes into the narrative in terms of Ellie doesn't have to wear the mask and how she hides her infection from people. That said, I wouldn't have liked it in the show because it's a slightly different medium. I don't want them to be putting gas masks on all the time and having the most dramatic bits happen where you can't see the characters' faces, you can't see them emoting.
There's not that many like key scenes that happen with
that's
the mask.
That's probably why they've done it, isn't it?
I think so.
So you can see the faces.
Pedro Pascal, like, I'm not doing it again.
Yeah.
I've just been Mandalorian.
It's just, if you think about it, like that moment where they were looking at the infected on the wall, like that would have had to be with a mask on.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much in the sewers where they'd have to have their mask on. I think it's...
You could have like little, like smaller ones or something. I don't know. They
little face mask.
But then would people not complain that it's just like, oh, but then it's not the right gas masks, you know? Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
If they made it like Fedra issue, you can kind of get around that.
But. I don't think the tendrils, the CGI tendrils, look that great. Mm. But I'm kind of here for them changing it just because I want to see the actors' faces.
Tendrils, sorry?
Coming out of the old lady's things. Mouth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, because that bit with the old lady, I just feel like that was the thing where I was like, it's another like old, that bit where you walk in every zombie movie where there's like someone feeding and they look up for a bit and then you get chased and we've just done that a million times. And I was just like, why are we doing that scene again in The Last of Us? Of all the things to apply that trope to.
The game still came out 10 years ago, so it is 10-year-old material still.
Yeah, but they didn't have that trope in the game. And that was 10 years ago. That was the thing. I was just Last of Us was such a fresh way to do a zombie story. That like when you do like zombie tropes, I find it. But I'm horrifically off base.
Say, it is made for TV. It has to have these beats in it that you as a gamer don't appreciate, where a TV viewer would. More.
Yeah, that's the case though. That they have to like lean on ostensibly like outdated tropes
to get my mum to watch it. Yeah,
yeah. Because I have that bit when it was like when Joel was running through the diner with Sarah, and there's that like,
was good.
The dude like jumping at him from behind. That's hilarious. I didn't like that much.
Flying around. That was so good.
I was like, that's so like, just turn around for a second. Like, I need to believe that you think something's chasing you. And he was just like, just didn't even look around. It was just like, no.
Oh man, I can only speak for myself. But if I'm carrying
he wasn't even
someone,
sprinting.
Which
he's just having a little jog.
He has a kid in his hand.
He can run faster,
dude. Right, you carry me out of here and see how far you can run with me. And
you'll get on my back, my
friend. It'll be less. I thought, I didn't mind that too much. And I liked that depiction of the infected personally because it's something we haven't really seen in the games. We've seen them kind of be inhuman in the games, but we've never seen them, you know, throw themselves with such velocity and disregard for their own well-being and anything.
Would
it was
that
just
have been a
interesting. I think so, yeah. It would have been,
yeah.
Like, I saw, again, someone else said this on Reddit, but I saw someone say that they hope they implement that kind of behavior in The Last of Us Part 3, and I'm all for that. If you
just like flinging them at stuff. It's like that's like World War Z zombies.
Totally, just having them like chase you in that kind of, with that intensity where they're going so fast, they have so much momentum that if you turn a corner, they're like flying straight down, knocking into everything.
That's kind of 28 days later, I guess.
100%. There's something about that kind of style of infected zombie or otherwise that does it for me
and
makes me scared and makes me feel like the characters are in danger.
Yeah. I did think that bit, I forgot which character looks upon these people. I think it's Joel, and there's a bit where it's in that scene where they're trying to escape after the plane goes down, and they sort of go through like a door, and there's like five or six people all feeding at the same time.
Yeah.
And I thought that was like a pretty cool, creepy kind of visual that I've not necessarily seen that much, because they're so just focused on like infecting someone else that they're not really even noticing that he's there. But you still have that sort of quiet, weird sound effects thing of all that stuff happening. I was like, that's quite effective.
Is that not where that man just like popped up and then stuff?
Yeah, I think he chases it. Yeah, because then it goes from there. Yeah.
I worry about what you'll think of what I'm going to say.
You'll know exactly what I'm
going to
say.
You might like it, but you might not, because obviously they change things big and small. Yeah. But one small change that I love was the fake out in how Joel in Tommy's car tips over, because they do the shot from the game where you pan left or whatever, and you see a truck coming at them.
Yes.
And you think, oh, it's going to go how the game goes. They're going to get hit by the truck. It's going to roll them over. And then something else hits that truck and they keep going. And then ultimately it's the plane debris that knocks them out.
Then when they get out, another truck goes right into the front of where they were parked.
Yes. Yeah. There was just something about that where, as you know, like, again, someone who knows this beat for beat, I thought that was a lovely wink of, you might think you know what's going on here, but you don't know everything. You know what I mean? You might know the big things, but you know, we're going to keep you on your toes. And I thought that was a great way of keeping fans in the moment and feeling the intensity of the moment, because it was still capable of surprising you, even if you've been in that car with Joel, Tommy, and Sarah multiple times and you've seen the gas station explode, you've seen the people happen, there were still surprises in it that kept you immersed in it.
Yeah, definitely. We should talk about Bella Ramsey as Ellie, because we haven't talked about her yet. Jim Stouse.
Yeah, she sold me. Yep. In the trailer, she didn't much. I couldn't see her as Ellie, but the second she starts speaking,
I can't say it on this podcast, but the way she says her swear words is perfect. Like, just she absolutely nails it. She swings right into it, and it's great.
No, she is arguably the best part so far.
Yeah.
Her casting, anyway.
Yeah.
I take that back, because Tommy is great, and so is Pedro Pascal. True. I take that entirely back.
I said this in the ups and downs, man, but for me, that casting director needs to get a raise. Yeah. Every single role, from the main roles to like casting Jonathan from The Mummy in the opening scene, to get in a bunch of bit part actors that, you know,
blown James Dowse's mind with that.
Yeah.
That's John Hannah.
Like, from the top tier right down to the extras, man. I thought everyone was just spot on.
I'm so happy Marlene is Marlene as well. That's such a good idea.
Yes. Before we jump to Marlene, I just want to kind of say about Bella Ramsey as Ellie, because I always thought I was going to like her. I was never one of those doubters who thought that she wouldn't be Ellie.
I wasn't, I still am. Carry on.
Who wasn't going to be Ellie. But I was still surprised by how quickly I was taken to her performance. For me, the very first scene that she's in, when she's chained to the wall, as soon as she kicked the plate of dinner away from her, I thought, that's Ellie. That's Ellie there. She's done it with the attitude, with the mannerisms, with the delivery, which I can't believe is so close to Ashley Johnson's original. Mm-hmm. I just think, I was surprised, but I wasn't surprised.
Yeah. I think her delivery is bang on. Like I said, I do love the way she swears. I'm a big fan. That's the thing. I love Ellie so much that I'm just like, I just want to champion that character and everything. I think it was just because it was quite full on, like maximum Ellie. Like, here she is. She's swearing. It's middle finger. She's going for it. She's trying to stab Joel. Like, it was just very like full on. Whereas when you meet her in the game, she's kind of like that, because she's defending Marlene. She thinks that Marlene's being held at gunpoint by Joel and Tess. So she jumps in and she calls them like an effer or whatever while she gets in the way, and it makes a bit more sense. And then that's why she's distrustful to Joel. And then like, I just like all that chemistry. I mean, I like everything else better in the game, but like, I think that makes more sense.
Can you see in season two her becoming the Ellie from part two?
That's a very interesting question.
Because in this show, because when you look at it, I didn't realize she was 19. She was about 12.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that they've like de-aged her in some way, like dressed her in these clothes that make her look like a child. But I'm assuming in season two, they're going to have to age her up, aren't they? Because it is so many years later.
What's the time span between one and two?
5 years.
Right, okay. So I guess, if you give it like another,
so they're going to have to somehow make her look older.
Yeah.
That's like really, unless they recast.
She's perfect though, isn't
she? Yeah.
But she is that age, so I assume
Ellie
in
part two is such a different character. Well, she is. She's like, she has loads of different mannerisms. She's taken on a lot of Joel and everything. So it's like, maybe you recast. I don't know. I don't know about that.
I think she could do it.
I don't feel like she has that's the thing that I'm not sold on. I don't feel like she has the ferocity. I definitely feel like she has the vocal delivery, but I don't really buy like the ferocity of it. Whereas like Ellie in the game could like kick ass and kill people.
Yeah, but the beginning of part one when you're playing, you don't see Ellie as a badass immediately, do you?
Not necessarily a badass, but I guess just like knowing that she's like from, it's almost like she's from the streets kind of thing. It's like she's been through a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't buy that this Ellie has been through a lot.
That's the thing that I was surprised that I did buy this early on, because I was confident that Bella Ramsey was going to be like a really good actress, like really give really good performances. Mm. But I too was like, does she have that kind of edge? Does she have that ferocity that the world of The Last of Us demands?
Yeah.
And like I said, from that first interaction, I thought, okay, there's something there.
Right.
There's like a little bit of darkness, a little bit of there's that fight.
Yeah.
In that performance that I think I'm looking forward to see, you know, obviously come out of its shell as the series progresses.
Mm-hmm. You're watching her and eventually she will have to carry the entire franchise on her back.
Yeah.
Because she has to. That is how her character ends up.
Yeah, potentially. What was the thing you wanted to talk about something else before we went back to Ellie?
Oh, we were talking about Marlene as well. Yes. Again, you keep saying James Dowse. Everyone's the best in the show.
And then you realise there's even more people who are good.
And then there's more. Yeah. Like, I think, you know, like I said, there's a few things I think the TV show does better than the game. Mm. And I think Marlene is one.
Really?
It obviously helps by having the same actress play the character twice. But I personally think this characterization of that character has more to her, more dimension. Whereas in the first one, she just felt like a rather bland leader of the Fireflies until you kind of get to the end and then you get her recordings where she's more wrangling with the morality of sending this girl that she knows to this operation that will kill her. This time around, she was funny. She had weight, like in terms of presence. You know, she felt like the leader of a military organization. Mm. And I just thought it felt like there was more to her, especially with the slight changes to her and Joel's relationship where they feel like they have more of a history, I guess.
Yeah, I thought she felt the most like a video game character, which in a way that I thought made her stand out. I think obviously I'm aware of like that she's reprising the role from the game as well. But it was just like the big cargo pants and she comes in, she's like, just do your orders, just follow your orders and whatever else. I don't necessarily think that the original one was like bland or anything, but those beats where they do like comedy when she's like
missing her ear,
I thought that was a weird beat.
Ah, I love that.
It was cool because she was missing an ear and it just panned across. And
that was that was the joke. Hey, but
she got her ear shot off.
Is that what it was? Okay. There was they do a couple of like weird, like, for me, they were weird like comedic beats. Like, I don't like things that betray the context. Like if you've had 20 years of this horrific reality and you've just been in a gunfight to like try and get this component for a car, which we know is super rare, to try and escape or do whatever you want, and she just does it, shut up, because her ear's been blown off. I was just like, I don't know, that just,
you got to combat awfulness with humor.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's what they're doing.
I guess so. That's, I mean, Ellie does that. Like, that's totally Ellie's defense mechanism, yeah. But that stood out to me. But of course it did. Because everything did.
Could I talk about my favorite?
You can change. Please be more positive than me.
And it's not bloody Pedro Pascal yeeting Bella Ramsey into the wall.
I did laugh at that.
Which was...
How was that?
Dude, he like when chucks Ellie into the
wall. Of course he does.
He would have been comparing that.
She tries grabbing the knife.
Yes.
Yes, I remember.
Yeah, it was like Joel in the games and it was just like caring for Ellie and then like Joel in the TV show just like slamming her into the wall.
Of course I do. I like that antagonistic relationship more. I think it's cool to start them off on that like front where he's standing on a knife, he's throwing her, not really wanted to throw her into the wall, but you know, he's kind of got
it's
that.
It's the way
general...
they cut it because they cut to the impact point. So it's like, oh my God, okay, like a UFC shoulder tackle or something.
He's got that general disregard, I guess, where it's like he's just on the edge at all time looking for threats. And like in that moment, he thinks Ellie is a threat.
Yeah.
But the change that I like in that scene is what they do with Robert's story. Because obviously, like we were saying at the beginning, you know, Robert, you get that great scene from the game where Jess and
Tess
and Joel are interrogating him. You break his arm. I think it's Tess who shoots him.
Yes.
But before then, obviously, you as the character Joel have killed, you know, tens of men getting up to that point. You've been sneaking through. You've been in shootouts. You've been, you know, choking out Robert's men. I love that. Initially, I didn't like that they arrived and Robert was dead because I thought, needless change. Why would you omit the scene of them interrogating him? It shows how ruthless they are. It shows how hardened they become to the world.
Yep.
I think it's good, though, because by not showing you Joel hurt a person throughout the entire episode, like before the outbreak or after the outbreak, it makes, for me, his first kill more impactful. So then when we get to the end, when he finally does hurt someone and kills someone and beats the guard to death because it reminds him of Sarah, to me, it made that kill more impactful. And it kind of, I was thinking about that quote that Craig Mazin said that kind of went viral and everyone was picking apart, where he was talking about how, you know, he wants to make the violence in The Last of Us more meaningful. And what he meant by that was like the violence that you do to just random NPCs, random goons that you kill who, like, you don't know them. They're not characterized. They are just enemies. They are just pixels that you explode. Yeah. And I thought killing that guard, who I think is called Lee, because you get a scene with him earlier on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I just thought that was a great example of what he meant. You know, you've taken someone who is just kind of a nameless NPC in the game who you don't really care if they live or die, and you've turned one of Joel's acquaintances into his first kill, and it's a brutal kill, and it's in response to him being, like, triggered from the memory of Sarah's death. For me, I have problems with the execution of the scene, but I think in theory and from a storytelling perspective, that's the biggest change of the episode, and it's the one I love the most.
The way, I mean, like, when you guys talk, when you said, what do I think of Joel, I didn't buy him as, like, a ruthless dude who'll do whatever to get by. Like, I feel like you get told that. There's that bit where you get to see Robert interrogating Tess, Robert is, like, terrified of Joel. Who's that guy you've got with you? And she's like, oh, you know, he's with me and whatever. But it's like, we don't know what that's based on. We don't see him do anything. There's that one bit where he says to one of the Fireflies, like, you know, tell me to look for the light and I'll break your jaw. And I'm like, that's a great line for Joel. But then later on, when they make it a whole deal that he's punched that guy to death, like, and he's looking at his knuckles and everything, and they sort of, like, I didn't like that because I was like, well, he's meant to be this ruthless dude, 20 years of manifesting the death of his daughter into violent actions, which you feel way more in the game because they execute Robert after having broke his arm. I feel like by getting rid of that and not really cementing just how far Joel had fallen, and in the game, like, you know, being part of Tess's gang, like, he's happy to almost be subservient to Tess. Like, she comes home full of bruises and everything, and then she's like, right, let's go get our weapons back or whatever, and they sort of just work together. I just, all those little changes, I didn't buy him as this, I didn't believe how far he's fallen. Like, he's fallen a lot further in the game to me. Mm. I like where he's at in the game a lot more. And then also, that was another thing that I just thought was weirdly kind of rushed was that bit where he's looking at his knuckles, he realizes he's killed the guy, and they weirdly have that scene at the same time as the Ellie's actually positive, she's actually infected scene, which in the game is a way bigger deal. Tess pulls a gun on Ellie and says, like, explain this right now. Because obviously to them, they've lived 2 decades in the apocalypse, and the very idea of someone surviving a bite is the biggest thing that they could possibly encounter, and they don't do that at all in this. Like, Tess sort of freaks a little bit, but, like, Ellie just goes, no, it's real, it's real. But, like, they fade the audio to, like, do a weird thing with Joel's headspace, and then they run through the mesh, and it's the end of the episode.
That's going
to
be the next 15 minutes of the next episode.
Yeah, totally, but already you've got past that initial reaction. Maybe you can do that later or something, but I just thought that whole thing was kind of rushed. And then to take the agency away from Ellie in that situation and make it more about Joel realizing he can kill people or whatever. I was just like, okay.
Okay.
Like, are you not already doing this? Is that why you're feared? Because we've been told you're feared.
I didn't take that away from Joel's action. I didn't think that was, like, the first time he's done it. I think, like I said, it's the first time we've seen him. But, like you said, you know, he's spoken about, people are scared of him. You know, he seems like an angry guy who's capable of, you know, we're told, bad things. And for me personally,
sure don't tell.
Well, for me personally, right, like, it's, you're not gonna like this, but for me personally, to show how far he's fallen, he's burning the dead kids. You know what I mean That to me evokes the same thing through a different way, through not just focusing at all through violence. That to me reflects his mental state, and then you save the violence towards the end to show what he's capable of and how much anger he still has over this death from 20 years ago.
Yeah. I'll throw in another thing just on the pile of stuff I didn't like. And then I swear I'm done. Which was just that bit where he's being held at gunpoint against that Lee or whatever that guard's called, and he remembers the scene with Sarah and he decides to act because of the Sarah comparison. I hate that that's so early in the story, because he's ultimately meant to get there with a comparison of, you have that one bit where he looks at the watch on the roof in the game and he starts to think of Ellie in the same way as Sarah. I thought doing that immediately, like, I just like, I like show and tell. I like a slow build. I like Joel's overall arc. I don't, obviously he's going to make some sort of comparison. But again, is that the first time he's been held at gunpoint in 20 years? Like,
from, he's the thing.
With a small girl behind him.
I have my issues with that sequence. Cause I would have liked them not to have shown you the flashback. I think it's way too soon. Yeah, that's already fresh in your memory.
You could imagine that that's what
it's very test audience-y. Like, we need to make sure that they know.
Yeah. That's it. Like, I think viewers are smart enough to get that. And I don't think it actually adds. That's definitely a case where I would say less is more.
One point.
Yeah. Yes. You get the 1 point. That's definitely the case.
99 to 1.
They didn't have to show that. But I, of course, disagree with what you said there about the Joel thing, because in my head, he's not even doing it for Ellie in that situation. He's not thinking, I want to kill this guy because she reminds me of my daughter right then specifically. It's just, he's reminded of that moment, like he's put back into the moment. And I would say it's not inconceivable to think that this is the first time he's being confronted with an armed military guy, specifically someone like taking orders, someone like a faceless military man in a uniform holding a flashlight and assault rifle at him. I think that, to me, the way I read that scene was he's taken back to that moment and he's doing it out of like anger and revenge, not because he's doing it because he's thinking, this time I can save the girl. It's like, you'll remind me of this situation, I'll beat the crap out of you because you remind me of the guy who killed my daughter.
There's a weird beat as well, because he's just taking a leak or whatever. He's just like peeing against the wall. Why? Like in the game, you come out the pipe and you get sidelined, like you're punched in the head by the dude with like a butt of a rifle. It's way more immediately threatening. It's, oh my God, we're just in this scenario, as opposed to dude taking a leak who decides to ruin your day. Like, what the hell? What?
That, to me, to be fair,
you liked it.
I'm back and forward on it.
Let me guess.
I could take it or leave it, to be honest, because I thought it was a weird beat in the moment. But again, I didn't hate it just because I thought...
Well, I thought it was weaker. I was just like...
It was weaker. Yeah, it definitely was weaker. It worked as a payoff for the guard thing earlier, because we know Joel knows who he is. Presumably he knows what guard duty he's on. He thinks like he's in safe hands. And the guy's like, no, I told you not to come out. Like you couldn't trust him after all. But I do agree that, that scene felt a little bit rushed in the grand scheme of things. And not all the changes were for the best.
Yeah, yeah. I guess, like you said, though, they'll probably open on the next episode. Mm-hmm. You'll have that whole conversation between Tess, Joel, and Ellie.
Well, this episode ended as well with an infected noise.
Yeah. Showing the two buildings falling together. Whatever.
Which I was so glad to see that. Right. I knew that they'd have to include that in the show, but seeing it visually was unbelievable. Seeing that tilted tower.
Yeah.
Just that tilted tower.
That tilted tower, baby. Oh, God, I can't wait to go there in the next episode.
Where are we dropping, boys? It's a whole thing.
Oh, yeah, that is a Fortnite.
Yeah, that's what you were doing.
I didn't even get my own joke.
We should end on just sort of general thoughts about the rest of the season. Like, what kind of stuff do you want to see? Do you actually want them to take more risks and things that maybe they've not talked about? Like the idea of the spores being replaced with the tendrils. That's one of the only things that's come out so far. But I wonder if there is more, or there are more, fundamental changes that just haven't really been talked about. How close do you want them to play?
Just a couple more. Like every episode, add a few scenes that I'd be like, oh, that's cool that they're added this. Every episode, that's all I'd be happy with. One-to-one remake with a few added scenes.
Right.
Yeah. For me, I think there are certain scenes you can't get rid of, and you should probably try to veer as close to the original as possible. But there's so much about The Last of Us, the game. So many great moments that don't happen in cutscenes. They happen in random dialogue between Joel and Ellie while they're on missions, while they're in gunfights, while they're doing endless ladder puzzles that I think, can be reframed in original ways. And I'm excited and confident after the first episode that they can pull the original stuff off. For me, and it might get different mileage on this, but for me, the original stuff worked. The horror worked. I like the way they kind of fleshed out the characters and whatnot. So going forward, I'm excited to see what they do with Bill and Frank. I'm excited to see who Melanie Lynskey's character is and like what her role in the story is going to be, because she's not from the games as far as I'm aware, nor is her the settlement that she's involved in or whatever. I don't know. She's only in the trailer. So like, it's that stuff that I'm more excited to look forward to, because for as good as, for instance, Sarah's death here was, I have seen that so many times, and it's still great, quote unquote, to weirdly
it
say
is
that.
It is weird
about
comparing,
like 100%. It's still an integral part, and it was, exciting to see in live action, but I just love what they added, man. Love what they added. I want to see what they add next.
I guess I'm curious if they show more of like Marlene's side of things, because I feel like she leaves the story for so long in the game and comes back at the very end, and then obviously has to deliver the information of like, we're going to have to operate kind of thing to keep that vague. And so I wonder if they flesh her stuff out, because they did do a bit more of that in 2. They sort of like filled in some more scenes with the doctors and, hey, she was up to this before all these other scenes happen and do it that way. I guess we'll just see how it goes. I don't know if I'm going to watch any more of it. So
you will.
I don't know. I will just have to wait and see. But yes, go check out Josh's Ups and Downs. We'll try and keep on top of all the episode reviews as they roll out, and we'll do another podcast as the season comes to a close, which means I'll have to watch at least the finale.
You will. Imagine that. Watch missing everything, watching the finale. What if you change the ending?
What if they do? Yeah. At least that'll be something new. And now they're recreating stuff that I could do better. Or they did better. But yes, for now, this has been the World Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by James Dowse.
Thanks for that, Scott.
Anytime, man, Josh Brown.
It's always a pleasure, Scott.
Always a pleasure to not watch any more of The Last of Us. And we'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.